Beloved Bhagwan, but the Buddha said, only after undergoing innumerable hardships for 3 asankhya kalpas did I achieve enlightenment. Why do you now say that simply beholding the mind and overcoming the 3 poisons is liberation? The words of the Buddha are true, but the 3 asankhya kalpas refer to the 3 poisoned states of mind. What we call asankhya in Sanskrit, you call countless. Within these 3 poisoned states of mind are countless evil thoughts, and every thought lasts a kalpa. Such an infinity is what the Buddha meant by the 3 asankhya kalpas. But the great bodhisattvas have only achieved enlightenment by observing the 3 sets of precepts and by practicing the 6 paramitas. Now you tell disciples merely to behold the mind. How can anyone reach enlightenment without cultivating the rules of discipline? The 3 sets of precepts are for overcoming the 3 poisoned states of mind. When you overcome these poisons, you create 3 sets of limitless virtue. A set gathers things together, in this case, countless good thoughts throughout your mind. And the 6 paramitas are for purifying the 6 senses. What we call paramitas, you call means to the other shore. By purifying your 6 senses of the dust of sensation, the paramitas ferry you across the river of affliction to the shore of enlightenment. According to the sutras, the 3 sets of precepts are: I vow to put an end to all evils. I vow to cultivate all virtues, and I vow to liberate all beings. But now you say they're only for controlling the 3 poisoned states of mind. Isn't this contrary to the meaning of the scriptures? The sutras of the Buddha are true. But long ago, when that great bodhisattva was cultivating the seed of enlightenment, it was to counter the 3 poisons that he made his 3 vows. Practicing moral prohibitions to counter the poison of greed, he vowed to put an end to all evils. Practicing meditation to counter the poison of anger, he vowed to cultivate all virtues. And practicing wisdom to counter the poison of delusion, he vowed to liberate all beings. Because he persevered in these 3 pure practices of morality, meditation, and wisdom, he was able to overcome the 3 poisons and reach enlightenment. By overcoming the 3 poisons, he wiped out everything sinful and thus put an end to evil. By observing the 3 sets of precepts, he did nothing but good, and thus cultivated virtue. And by putting an end to evil and cultivating virtue, he consummated all practices, benefited himself as well as others, and rescued mortals everywhere. Thus, he liberated beings.
Bodhidharma is now really facing questions for which he has no answer. The same was the case in the last night's sutras. And it continues, because the disciples are asking more and more about the ultimate, which simply baffles every knowledge. It is a peace, a silence, there is no answer. But it is really difficult to accept that you are enlightened and you don't know the answers for the ultimate questions. Then what your enlightenment has done to you, if it has not solved the mystery, then what kind of wisdom you have achieved? This has to be clarified to you. It is said that Bodhidharma did not clarify it to his disciples. On the contrary, he continued to answer questions which cannot be answered by their very nature. But this is a problem that every master has to face. When the questions are trivial, the master is perfectly at ease to answer. But as the disciples become more and more keener in their inquiry, and they start touching the ultimate, the master comes to a difficult situation. And not to let the disciple feel that the master does not know, he goes on answering. But those answers are not true answers. They are in themselves perfectly right for some other questions, but not for the questions that have been posed before him. The question is very important. But even the greatest masters like Bodhidharma belong to a particular line of philosophy, a particular set of doctrines. Hence, they have to keep on repeating the ideological system they have accepted. It is totally different with me. I don't belong to any ideology. I don't have to console anybody. I am not concerned who gets annoyed and irritated. My sole concern is, when you ask a question, you need a sincere answer, not according to the ideology, but according to my own experience. The disciple asks, but the Buddha said, only after undergoing innumerable hardships for 3 asankhya kalpas did I achieve enlightenment. Why do you now say that simply beholding the mind and overcoming the 3 poisons is liberation? The truth is a little complicated. First, I will explain to you my position, if I was to answer the question. And then it will be easy for you to understand the difference when a person answers because of a certain ideological school that he belongs to. And when a person answers just out of his own experience and response. The Buddha has certainly said that only after undergoing innumerable hardships for 3 asankhya kalpas did I achieve enlightenment. But as far as I can see, this is not a true statement of Gautam Buddha himself. It is how the Mahayana school of Buddhism maintains that this is the answer. Now the Buddha is not there to refute it. And everything that he has said has been written after his death. And it has been written by a common consent. A great gathering was called of all the old disciples who have been listening to him from the very beginning. And they assembled what everybody remembers. And there was dissension, there was conflict, there was contradiction, and the whole gathering divided into 32 groups. And they separated with each other. And all 32 groups have their own scriptures, what Buddha said. This is only one school, the biggest, which has the most following. And certainly the reason why it has the most and the biggest following is that it says that Buddha once awakened remains on this soul to liberate people. In fact, they have even invented a story. Then when he reached the doors of moksha, the ultimate resting place for the liberated beings, the doors were opened and there was great music and celebration. Because it is rarely, very rarely happens that a man comes to such great enlightenment. Thousands of years pass and the door remains closed. Naturally, there was great jubilation among the other Buddhas who have entered in moksha in millions of years that have passed. They were welcoming a new guest. But Buddha refused to enter the gate. He turned his back towards the gate and told the gatekeeper that, "Please close the gate. I will stand out the gate until the last human being has become enlightened. It may take millions and millions of years. It does not matter. I am at peace. I am in absolute ecstasy. I can wait." But this will be a little selfish to enter the gate and forget all about those who are still groping in the darkness. Every effort was made to persuade him that this is not the way. Nobody has done this before. He said that simply means nobody has entered moksha with a compassionate heart. For compassion towards my human brothers and sisters, I can renounce the moksha itself. It does not matter to me. It cannot give me more than I have already got. I will stand here before the door, and when the last human being has passed in, then I will pass through it. This is a Mahayana fictitious story. Because of this idea of compassion for other human beings, naturally Mahayana attracted more people who are not able to become on their own awakened. They need help. They need a compassionate awakened person. And the Mahayana preaches that every enlightened people in Mahayana will be doing every possible thing that he can do to make more and more people liberated. Because he has now a dual duty. People have to be liberated. And secondly, for millions of years Gautam Buddha has to stand if people are not liberated. So compassion for the people, they have to make every effort to liberate them. And gratitude for Gautam Buddha and for his strange stand that he is boycotting the moksha, the ultimate state of silence and peace and rest. Just to make it sure that nobody is left behind. The other school is Hinayana. He has not attracted so many people. The very word means the small boat. Mahayana means the big ship. An ocean liner. So thousands of people can go to the other shore together. But in a small boat, only one man can go. And the people who created Hinayana are the arhatas. They are enlightened and their standpoint is that even to make an effort to liberate people is interfering into their individual freedom. It is not compassion. It is not love. Love gives freedom. Compassion does not force a certain way of life on people. But liberation is a certain way of life. Although it is for their good, but you are forcing them, insisting on it, that you follow the path. Don't waste time. You are not allowing them total freedom to be themselves. And when they feel like moving on the path, they will move. And if they don't feel, it is nobody's concern. It is their absolute right to remain in the world and not to go to moksha. The arhatas interpret compassion in a very refined way, in a very total different perspective. It is very difficult to choose who is right. Both seem to be right. But Hinayana naturally could not gather more disciples. Who will be interested in people like Hinayana, who are not interested even in your liberation? They will not speak, they will not support, they will not give you a hand to pull you out of the ditch. They will simply wait. If you are capable of falling in the ditch, you are certainly capable of getting out of it. If you are capable of falling into wrong paths, you are perfectly capable of feeling the misery, the suffering of the wrong path, and you can change your path. Nobody else can do it for you. So this is the Mahayana interpretation that Buddha took millions of ages to become enlightened. For the arhatas, the situation is totally different. They say it is not a question of millions of years and arduous effort. It was all a dream. Whether you dreamed for 3 million years or 3 days or 3 minutes, it makes no difference. The moment you wake up, all the dreams will be found to be simply hot air. There is no substance in them. Even your disciplines, what you are practicing to attain liberation, is really a greed. And greed cannot destroy greed. It is an ambition. And ambition cannot destroy the ego. Perhaps it is the greatest ambition to be liberated, to be enlightened. But wherever there is desire and ambition, you are in bondage. And all your practices and all your disciplines are but practicing in a dream. It is almost like you are weak, but in your dream you do great gymnastics. And you feel that you have become a world champion. But in the morning when you wake up, the same mouse is sleeping in the bed. What happened to all your gymnastics that you have been dreaming about? You can dream about being a great sage You can dream of being a great thief. You can dream of murdering many peoples. You can dream of serving many peoples. But in the morning you will feel there is no distinction between all those dreams. They are all dreams made of the same stuff. They are all fictions. The good is as much a fiction as bad. The spiritual discipline is as much a fiction as murdering somebody else. So those who don't believe in the Mahayana doctrine, they say you can become enlightened here and now. And that was really the position of Bodhidharma. And that is creating the problem now. He cannot say Buddha is wrong. That is impossible. He loves Gautam Buddha. He is a disciple of Gautam Buddha. So he cannot say Gautam Buddha is wrong. He has to say the words of the Buddha are true. But his own position is that whatever you have been doing in your unconsciousness is meaningless. And when you wake up, it all disappears within seconds. And you can wake up at any moment. Just a certain right device. And you will be awakened. You can wake up in the middle of the night. The dreams cannot prevent you from waking up. Neither your sleep can prevent you from waking up. It is just your own will not to wake up. That's why the sleep continues and the dream continues. If the will to wake up arises in you, then enlightenment is instantaneous. Now, this is his own position. But he is in a difficulty. Because he belongs to the Mahayana school. And he was teaching in China to Mahayana school. China belongs to Mahayana school. Those disciples who were asking, they were quoting Buddha according to Mahayana sutras. Now nobody knows whether Buddha had said them or they are inventions of a certain school. Because in the Hinayana school, those sutras are not found. And these are only two schools, the main. And there are 34 other schools. which are very small streams, but they have also something grandeur of their own. And they all differ. But at the one point they all agree that Buddha cannot be wrong. They cannot say that Buddha is wrong. So they have to go round about saying that Buddha is right. Still, what they are saying is also right, although it is contradictory. The disciple is asking, why do you now say that simply beholding the mind and overcoming the three poisons is liberation? You are making it too simple. While Buddha himself is saying that he has been going under innumerable hardships for three asankhya kalpas, that is innumerable ages, and then I did achieve enlightenment. It is not instantaneous. It has a long history of millions of years behind it, of doing good, of avoiding evil, of practicing meditation, of practicing other disciplines. It took for him three innumerable ages to become a Buddha. If this is the situation of a Gautam Buddha, who seems to be the greatest human being who has lived on the earth, what will be the situation for an ordinary man? Perhaps instead of 13 asankhya kalpas or 30, but you are saying that just watching your mind you can become this very moment enlightened. How these two different attitudes arose? If you don't understand the background, you will not be able to understand the difficulty of Bodhidharma. Buddha left his palace when he was 29 years of old. And he went to every great teacher who was famous in his day. And he was such a sincere seeker that he risked everything. Whatever those teachers said, he did it more perfectly than they have ever expected from anyone. In fact, they themselves were not so perfect. And Buddha said, I have done it, but nothing has happened. I am still as ignorant as I was before. Yes, I have learned a certain skill. I can do a certain distortion of the body by yoga. but that does not make me aware of my being. It does not deliver me the good, the truth. His sincerity was indubitable. Even his teachers felt ashamed. They have never come across such a student. The teacher, the ordinary teacher, always likes the mediocre students. Because compared to them, he is a great teacher. And whenever, sometimes, it happens that a great student comes to him, who towers higher than the teacher himself, then the teacher feels angry, irritated, because the student continuously brings questions which the teacher cannot answer. And whatever he answers, the student is always able to refute it. One of my teachers got tired of me. Because for 8 months continuously, I would not let him move a single inch. We were stuck on a single point. And he will bring all kinds of arguments, and he was looking into books. And I was also working hard to refute him. And all the other students enjoyed, because the teacher was so much engaged with me, he has completely forgotten to give homework or to teach anything. And there was no time, because the first lesson, has not been learnt yet. So he cannot move to the second. And the examination was coming near, then he became really mad at me. He started shouting at me. I said, listen, you are an old man. If you shout so much, you may have a heart attack. And I hope it is not heart failure, just a small attack. But don't think that by shouting you can shut me up. And if you think it is a match in shouting, I can also shout. And you are an old man. I will really enjoy shouting. So calm down. He understood the point. But he left the class and went to the principal and said, now it is absolutely certain that either I can remain in the school, in the college, or this student can remain. You can choose. The principal said, but what is the matter? Has he done anything wrong to you? He said, he has not been allowing me to teach the students, and the examination is coming close. All the students are going to fail except him. And he has a strange stamina. I have been working hard, I have never worked. Reading late in the night, finding new arguments, and the next day he simply refutes them. He is working harder than me. Of course, he is young. And it is very humiliating. Every day to get defeated, I resign. I will not come to the college again if you don't expel him. And he left for his home. The principal called me. He knew me. I had brought so many trophies and so many cups from all over the country, from all the universities, for debating, for eloquence competition, that he was very much happy that I had made his college nationwide famous. He said, I am in a difficulty. Why you are irritating that old man? He is our old professor, well educated, has 2 PhDs, has been conferred D.Litt recently by the university. He is a well-known scholar. We cannot lose him. I said, you can keep him. But you are being unfair and unjust. Because I have not done anything harmful to him. He is the professor of logic. And if a professor of logic cannot argue with the student, then who is going to argue? The whole subject of logic is argument and sharpening of arguments. And I am really doing my work. As every student should do. Because the students are behaving like dodos, they don't bother about the subject. They have other interests. Somebody has a girlfriend, somebody has interest in the movies. There are 1001 things in the world. And they study only at the end of the year. And now, because questions have become stereotyped, the same questions go on repeating every year. Just read 4 years question papers, and that's enough. 20 questions you prepare. And you are going to find 5 questions from them in your examination. There is no need to bother about the whole course. Because professors are lazy, even to find a new question for them is difficult. So they just look at 4-5 years' questions and find out questions. Maybe they rephrase them. That is their whole work. And in the market now, keys have appeared. Which are a very profitable business. Some retired professor knows perfectly well what is going to come into examination. He takes in his book 10 years' questions and gives the answers to the point. You just purchase a key book. There is no need to go into the originals because that is a difficult task. And if you know the answer, nobody bothers whether you know it or not, whether you have crammed it. And those keys are made in such a way by retired professors that the answer is very small that can be crammed. So no intelligence is needed. I was trying, because I have not come to the college just to sit there. I am not interested in degrees. My interest is to sharpen my intelligence. The principal said, I can understand you, but still I will have to expel you. It is unjust, and I am feeling guilty. Because I cannot leave that professor. Without him, our whole logical department will collapse. He is the senior most professor. And he is a very stubborn man. If he has said that he will not come unless I am expelled, he will not come. But knowing the injustice, you have not been doing anything harmful. Just you don't have a teacher of a real caliber and genius. He is a mediocre man. He can write PhD theses and he can be awarded a D.Litt for his services, but he is not a genius that I know. So I will expel you because he would insist to see on the notice board that my name is there and I am expelled. But I will make arrangement for you in another college. I will phone to the principal. I said, I don't want to create any trouble for your institution or for you or for the old professor. I have no antagonism towards him. Just I feel a great pity you make arrangement, but it is not going to be easy. Because this situation that has been happening for 8 months has become the talk of all the colleges and the university. Every principal knows. He phoned one principal who was very close to him, and the principal said, "Just forgive me. You are sending a trouble to us because you cannot manage." He tried few other colleges because the city I was in was one of the most significant city as far as education is concerned. There were 20 colleges in all. He called few other principals. Everybody said, "You can send anybody, but about that student we have heard. And you are the oldest college and you have the best professors. If they are ready to resign because of him, what will happen to our professors who are not so senior, who are not so experienced?" He was in a very dilemma, and I was sitting there listening to all this phone talk. I told him, "You will not be able to manage. I will manage myself. You just give me expulsion order and I will manage." And I managed with a principal with the condition that I will never come to the college. I will pay the fee, but I will never come to the college. I can come to the library, but not to the classes. I will not attend the classes. So no problem arises. And he will see to it that I get the right attendance for appearing in the examination. I said, "That's a great arrangement. In fact, I have always wanted it." For 2 years, I never went in a single class for a single day. But those 2 years were of great importance. I moved into the library as deeply as possible. Before the library will open, I was there, and only when the librarian had to push me out because it is being closed, I had to leave reluctantly. The same is the situation Bodhidharma belongs to a particular school of Mahayana, because China, the whole China, does not have any other school except Mahayana. And to talk to the Mahayana people that you can become enlightened just like a click is not possible for them to believe, because Buddha himself says that he had to do hard work for three asankhyas, innumerable ages. Then he became enlightened. But Bodhidharma knew it by his own experience that he has become enlightened without any austerity, without any discipline, without going through fast, without doing prayers, rituals. He has become enlightened just by becoming aware of his mind. But to say that the Gautam Buddha is wrong, he will be surrounded by the whole country which believes that Gautam Buddha cannot be wrong. And in actual fact, for 6 years, Gautam Buddha, after leaving his palace, did everything and all the teachers finally felt that he is a far greater soul than they themselves are. And they said to him, "Forgive us. All that we knew, we have told you. More than that is beyond our capacity. But we will suggest you a greater teacher." 6 years he went from one teacher to another teacher, and finally the greatest teacher of those days said to him, "You are wasting your time. No teacher can help you. It is time enough that you should be on your own. Just watch your mind. And I don't have any other teaching for you." Tired of those 6 years' continuous discipline, it was a full moon night when he was refused by the teacher and told that, "Just watch your mind. There is no discipline for you. Those disciplines are for mediocre minds. They are compromises. According to everybody's capacity, a certain ritual to console him that he is doing some work for enlightenment. Nothing will satisfy you unless enlightenment happens." So he went away a full moon night. It has passed just few days before. And he was sitting under a tree by the side of Niranjana in Bihar. A woman in India, even trees are worshipped. and I don't see anything wrong in it. Because a tree is also a living being, and they are very nice people. They don't do any harm to anybody. A woman has been a worshipper of that Bodhi tree. And she has told to the god of the tree that if she becomes pregnant, because she was not getting pregnant for years, if she becomes pregnant, she will bring sweets, fruits and flowers as a present to the god of the tree. And in the full moon night, she came, she has become pregnant. And when she became absolutely certain, and the physician said, "You are pregnant," she brought delicious food, sweets, flowers, her name was Sujata. It is a significant name in the history of Gautama Buddha. And he was hungry because he has been fasting for months. Too hungry. But he was a beautiful man, a prince, and because of the hunger he had become almost pale, and in the full moon night he looked as if the god of the tree has come out. The woman could not believe. She really thought, a villager, she really thought that the god of the tree has come out to receive her present. She fell into his feet and offered him all that she has brought. This was the first time in these 6 years that he has taken a full meal, and that too in the night. In the night, it is not allowed for ascetics to eat, but now he was no more an ascetic. When the teacher said, all that you have to do is to watch, he dropped all disciplines, all asceticism. He has renounced his kingdom, now he renounced his renunciation too. For the first time he was perfectly relaxed. He ate well. And after 6 years, he slept for the first time without any tension. There is no ambition, there is no desire, there is nowhere to go, nothing to be searched. In this relaxed state, even in his sleep, he became aware that he is watching his mind. Just a small flame of awareness is there, although the body is asleep, The mind is asleep, but something beyond is alert. And in the morning when he opened his eyes, the last star was disappearing. And the actual fact is, as the last star was disappearing, he also disappeared as an ego, as a personality. And the enlightenment was sudden. Suddenly he saw his authentic being. Now the problem has arisen. Mahayanis say that this sudden experiment, this sudden experience happened because of those 6 years continuous austerities. And there are people, a certain school of sudden enlightenment. This is gradual enlightenment. They say it has nothing to do with those 6 years. If we have stopped at 5 years, the experience would have happened. And if somebody has told him the very first day, and if he had the intelligence to understand it, it would have happened the very first day he left the palace. Those 6 years are not a cause for the effect of enlightenment. Enlightenment cannot have a cause. Their reasoning is very clear. Bodhidharma has said in the sutras that enlightenment has no cause. Then the question of millions of ages and arduous effort is meaningless. Enlightenment is always sudden. If it is not sudden, it is not because the nature of enlightenment is gradual. It is because your mind leaves you gradually. You are not ready to take the risk wholesale. You take the risk in retail. Inch by inch, part by part, American way, installments. A little bit you lose today, a little bit tomorrow, and a little bit. It takes time because you are not ready to drop the mind in its totality, in this very moment. You say, I will do it slowly, tomorrow, then day after tomorrow. And what is the hurry? So there are these two schools, the gradual school of enlightenment, which appeals to many people because they don't have the guts to drop the mind immediately. And the sudden school of enlightenment, which belongs to only people who have the hearts of a lion, who can simply risk everything. I remember about a Japanese actor He was very famous in America, and he earned millions of dollars. And he wanted to return back home. He has earned enough. But returning home, he thought it is better to go around the world, because then he will not leave his home. Now he wants to rest. So he wanted to see every beautiful place around the world, and he reached Paris. And his guide took him to many places, and the guide said, "Would you like to see a casino?" He said, "Certainly. I want to see everything." He said, "In Paris, going without seeing a casino is missing much. Paris has the best casinos. Casinos are gambling places. And as he entered the casino and he saw people putting hundreds of dollars, thousands of dollars, and he got interested in the game. He risked all his millions of dollars that he has earned in America just on one stake, not gradual. Even the owner of the casino was afraid what to do with this man. If he wins, his whole casino is gone. A strange fellow. He has been in the business for so long, but he has never seen a man putting millions of dollars at the risk, at the stake. But there was no way to refuse. It is not possible to refuse. You have to accept the stake. And fortunately for the casino owner, he lost. He lost every single dollar that he has earned and was hoping to live now a retired life. He has nothing now. He went into his hotel and went to sleep. In the morning, he saw the newspaper that a Japanese has committed suicide by jumping from a forty-story building. And naturally it was thought that it must be the same Japanese who has lost millions of dollars in the casino. So they have mentioned it, that it seems it is the same Japanese who has lost millions of dollars last night And he has not left even a single dollar for himself. He read the news and he laughs. And the owner of the hotel read the news and he said he was in my hotel. How he reached into the other hotel? He was a famous name. He rushed to his room and he was laughing so madly. The owner asked, "Why are you laughing?" He said, "I'm laughing because I'm alive and this newspaper said I have committed suicide by jumping from a hotel. Some other Japanese has committed suicide. And it was very logical conclusion by the journalist that it must be the same famous American actor. And the body was so distorted, so broken, in pieces, that there was no way to find out who is the man. The owner of the hotel asked him, "It is strange, you lost all your life's earnings and still you slept well." He said, "It does not matter. I enjoyed the thrill for a moment, this way or that. And I enjoyed the owner of the casino trembling." As far as money is concerned, I can go back and earn again. That is not a problem. It was not stolen money. I have earned it. The owner said to him, "But you could have played the way all gamblers play. Small sums. You could have played the whole night. Why you staked everything?" And in his autobiography I was reading, he says, "I belong to the sudden enlightenment school. I don't believe in gradual installments. If you have to do something, do it totally and intensely. If you don't want to do it, then don't unnecessarily befool yourself by doing it partially. Bodhidharma is authentically a man of sudden enlightenment. But he was initiated by the woman Prajnatara. She was a Mahayanist. And she sent him to China to help the growing religion there. The religion was growing like wildfire. Just in 600 years, it reached China at the time of Jesus Christ 500 years after Gautama Buddha, and already in 600 years there were 30,000 Buddhist temples in China, 2 million Buddhist monks in China, and there is no mention of the layman. Millions and millions of people, because they were really hungry. Confucius has made them so hungry of religion, because in Confucius' mind there is no soul, no religion. It is because of Confucius that China has turned to communism. Because Confucius' mind is very close to Karl Marx. There is not much difference. Both believe that there is no God, there is no soul, and all religions are useless. Both believe that consciousness is just a byproduct of five elements getting together, and death is the end. So there is no question of good actions or bad actions. Confucius has been such a dominating figure, such an influential figure, that the whole soul of the Chinese people was hungry. There was an appetite which the Buddhist monks fulfilled. There was a gap, so there was no conflict, no quarrel. Just the Buddhists were accepted without any struggle against anybody. And Prajñātara sent Bodhidharma, because up to now there has not gone any enlightened man. There have gone many scholars, thousands of scholars, who were trying to translate Buddhist scriptures into Chinese, but they were only scholars. And Prajñātara thought, now China needs to see an enlightened man. It deserves. Just in 600 years, it has done such a great work. Almost the whole country has gone from Confucius to Gautama Buddha. Because she told Bodhidharma, you have to go. He went there, but his own enlightenment was sudden. And in China, the school that has spread in people was Mahayana, which believes in gradual enlightenment. This is the dilemma. The students are raising the question that Buddha says one thing and you are saying just the opposite. Why do you now say that simply beholding the mind and overcoming the three poisons is liberation? You are making it too simple. That one can do it just now. Then what happened about Gautama Buddha's struggle for three innumerable kalpas? But perhaps even Bodhidharma is not aware about the distinction that I have made, that just before his enlightenment, Gautam Buddha has dropped all disciplines. That would have been the right answer. That Gautam Buddha may have struggled for 3 or 30 innumerable kalpas, it was just a dream. And when the dream is broken, it always happens in a single moment. Just a single moment before you were asleep, and after a single moment you are awake. And when you are awake, all dreams disappear, which were appearing so real. This would have been the right answer, but it would not have fitted with the Mahayana school. That's why he goes on creating a theological smoke around the question again. The words of the Buddha are true, but the 3 asankhya kalpas refer to the 3 poisoned states of mind. That is not true. He actually refers to innumerable lives in which he has struggled to achieve Buddhahood, and finally, in the last life, he has achieved it. Now he is trying to make somehow a plausible answer. What we call asankhya in Sanskrit, you call countless. Within these 3 poisoned states of mind are countless evil thoughts. Now this is all nonsense, because it is not relevant to the question again. And every thought lasts a kalpa. That is even worse than nonsense. It is absurd. And you know it. A thought does not last even for an hour. Just try for any thought to remain in your mind for 1 hour continuously, and you will be surprised that it goes on slipping out of the mind. Mind is in a constant traffic. You cannot stand in the middle of the traffic. Your thoughts are moving faster than anything. One kalpa is a very long time. A thought does not remain even for a few seconds. Your mind is continuously a flux. It is just like a river. Heraclitus says you cannot step in the same river twice, because it is going so fast. By the time you step twice, it is another water. It is the same river just for the name's sake. But that water that you have stepped in for the first time is no more there. I go a little further than Heraclitus. I say you cannot step even once in the same river, because when your feet touches the upper part of the water, the lower part is rushing by. As your feet goes a little deeper, the lower part and the upper part is rushing by. By the time you reach to the bottom, everything has changed. From the time when you have touched the surface of the water, you have not stepped in the same water, because every second the new water is coming in and the old water is going out. Heraclitus is not aware that even stepping once in the same water is impossible. Twice is too much. The same is the situation of human mind. It is just a flux, hundreds of thoughts queuing and going, relevant, irrelevant, consistent, inconsistent. But he is trying to make some sense of Buddha's statement. Such an infinity is what the Buddha meant by the three asankalpas. No. He actually meant what the words say. He is imposing his own idea on it just to make it dilute, just to bring it closer to his sudden enlightenment idea. In his place, I would have said Gautam Buddha is wrong. And what he is saying about the three innumerable ages must have been said before he became enlightened. It is not a statement after his enlightenment. If he had ever said anything like that, it must have been before his enlightenment. Even before his enlightenment, he has five followers. Seeing him a king and a perfect ascetic, five Brahmin seekers had become his followers. They left because he accepted the food from Sujata in the night. And the word Sujata has great implication. It means well born, born out of a very high family. Now, anybody who is really born out of a high family will not have that name. Sujata must have been a Sudra, an untouchable woman. This is how human mind and human psychology functions. If she cannot belong to a high society, at least she can have a beautiful name. That means that she is well born. Her name certainly indicates that she belongs to a very lower strata of the society. Seeing that Buddha is accepting from a Sudra woman, he is not even asking to what caste you belong. And in the night, he is eating joyously. All the five disciples left him immediately, that he is a fraud, a fake. We have been deceived. He is not an ascetic at all. Buddha may have said something like that to those five disciples, but he was not enlightened then. And one has to remember any statement that has been made by a Buddha before enlightenment should not be taken in account at all. It means nothing. Only that which he has said after enlightenment has significance. He could have explained it very easily, but he is not as courageous as for centuries he has been believed. He cannot say the words of the Buddha are not true. He is trying to polish them and somehow dilute them and bring them closer to his own understanding. But the great bodhisattvas have only achieved enlightenment by observing the three sets of precepts and by practicing the six paramitas. The disciple asks again, now you tell disciples merely to behold the mind. How can anyone reach enlightenment without cultivating the rules of discipline? He is putting him in really dilemma. And these are their last questions. Bodhidharma says that no discipline is needed. No austerity is needed. All that is needed is an awareness of your mind. And I agree with him absolutely. That's what brings enlightenment. A man who is unconscious can discipline himself. He can sit just like the Buddha. He can shave his head. He can eat once a time only in 24 hours. He can have only three clothes, not more than that. But he will not become enlightened by this. If this was so, then all poor people would have become enlightened, who don't have even three clothes, who sometimes have to go to bed without eating anything, I have known people who have gone to sleep by tying a brick on their stomach so they don't feel that their stomach is empty. Such poverty exists in many parts of this country. These people would have become Buddhas. No, enlightenment has nothing to do with poverty, fasting, discipline, religious rituals. There is only single science of enlightenment, and that is creating more and more awareness about your acts, about your thoughts, about your emotions. Bodhidharma could have said exactly. But this is the trouble when you belong to an organization. When you belong to a certain philosophy, when you belong to a certain system of beliefs, when you are not a master of yourself, when somebody else you worship as a master, then this kind of dilemma is bound to happen. You have lost your individuality in a way. You have to support Gautam Buddha, even if it goes against your own understanding. Bodhidharma says, the three sets of precepts are for overcoming three poisoned states of the mind. When you overcome these poisons, you create three sets of limitless virtue. A set gathers things together. In this case, countless good thoughts throughout your mind, and the six paramitas are for purifying the six senses. What we call paramitas, you call means to the other source. By purifying your six senses of the dust of sensation, the paramitas ferry you across the river of affliction to the source of enlightenment. Cannot you see that the answer has no even far off relation to the question? It is not even a distant cousin. Bodhidharma could not manage to say simply the truth was the right thing. Whether it goes against Buddha or Krishna or Christ, it does not matter. I have to be my own truth. If it goes against somebody else's truth, that is his problem. That is not my problem. Truth has beauty when it arises in you. But if you are trying somehow to fix it in a certain system created by somebody else, you start distorting the truth. And to me, that is one of the greatest crimes. The question was simply significant, but the answer is not. The answer is right in some other context, but this place is not the place for this answer. He should have said, that all those three innumerable kalpas and the disciplines and austerities, Buddha has lived in dream. But perhaps he could not say to the Buddhists of China, because he was sent from here to make Buddhism more solid, and if he starts speaking in this way, how he is going to make Buddhism more solid? He starts compromising. And the moment somebody starts compromising, he loses the touch with the truth. Truth is an uncompromising experience. According to the sutras, the three sets of practices are, the disciples are asking again, I vow to put an end to all evils. I vow to cultivate all virtues. And I vow to liberate all beings. But now you say, they are only for controlling the three poison states of mind. Is not this contrary to the meaning of the scriptures? It is. But Bodhidharma is not capable to say so. In fact, it is said that Gautam Buddha has made these three vows to put an end to all evils, to cultivate all virtues, and to liberate all beings. But this was before he became enlightened. Hence, it has no value at all. After his enlightenment, he knew that all these woes were made in a state of dreaming. And what you decide in a dream, you are not supposed to follow when you wake up. You may have been flying in the dream, just like any bird across the sky. But when you wake up, you know it was a dream. And you don't insist that you really had flown like a bird. These three vows were certainly made by a Buddha, but they were made before his enlightenment. It is true, nobody has asked him, "What happened to your vows?" But Bodhidharma is being asked. He should have made it clear that they were made in dreams, and dreams don't matter at all. What matters is the awakened consciousness, and then he has not made any vow. But instead of that, he goes on saying, "The sutras of the Buddha are true." But you can see, even he says the sutras of the Buddha are true, he has lost the authority and the strength that comes from sincerity, that comes from your own experience of truth. He has become mild. But long ago, when that great Bodhisattva was cultivating the seed of enlightenment, it was to counter the three poisons that he made his three vows. He goes on again and again, bringing those three poisons for his health. Practicing moral prohibitions to counter the poison of greed, he vowed to put an end to all evils. Practicing meditation to counter the poison of anger, he vowed to cultivate all virtues. And practicing wisdom to counter the poison of delusion, he vowed to liberate all beings. Because he preserved in these three pure practices of morality, meditation and wisdom, he was able to overcome the three poisons and reach enlightenment. By overcoming the three poisons, he wiped out everything sinful and thus put an end to evil. By observing the three sets of precepts, he did nothing but good and thus cultivated virtue, and by putting an end to evil and cultivated virtue, he consummated all practices, benefited himself as well as others, and rescued mortals everywhere. Thus he liberated beings. He is not being authentic. He is simply trying somehow to manage the answer. The answer is not a spontaneous response. It is clever, intellectual. It may have satisfied his disciples. It cannot satisfy me. I am nobody's disciple. I don't belong to any belief system. I love people from all over the world. I never compare them. They are all unique. A Zarathustra is a Zarathustra. A Mahavira is a Mahavira. A Buddha is a Buddha. A Jesus is a Jesus. A Moses is a Moses. They are so unique that you should not make one of them a criterion that everybody else has to fit with him. Bodhidharma himself belongs to the same category. But because of his compromise, he falls down. He could not maintain his uniqueness. He remains a disciple of Gautam Buddha. And how a disciple can say that the words of the master are not right? It is an unique opportunity for you to listen to a man who has no master and who has a tremendous respect for truth. Whether it comes from Zarathustra or Lao Tzu or Buddha or Moses or Jesus, or Muhammad, if it is truth that rings bells into my heart, I am in absolute support with it. But if it is not true, I know my heart. The bells don't ring, and I immediately know something is wrong. Bodhidharma is trying to pacify, console. He is no more interested in truth. He is more interested in spreading the message of Buddha. And that's where he loses his uniqueness. Otherwise, he is as unique a person as Gautam Buddha himself. I cannot conceive what happened to him, why he could not say directly that these words are not true. They are not true because they don't resonate with my being. But this is what happens when you are towing the line of a certain party, political, religious, social. Then you have to be in agreement with everything without choice. The Buddhists were very happy with Bodhidharma because he established in China the discipline of Buddha, gave it very solid foundations and spread the message not only to China, from China to Taiwan, to Korea, to Japan. He did a great job. But he fell down from the height. He could have remained if he had said exactly the truth and explained it to the people in a very simple way, that these are statements made by Buddha before his enlightenment. And anything that he has said before enlightenment is immaterial. To me, his statements are pure gold after his enlightenment. And I don't think he would have hurt the feelings of people. And perhaps he would have created a precedent for other enlightened people that you need not agree to everything. You have certainly an obligation to accept the truth from whichever direction it comes. But you don't have any obligation to agree with any untruth, any fiction created by the priests who know nothing of the truth. He did his job for which he was sent, but he lost something beautiful in his own being. To me, that is more important than the whole China becoming Buddhist. A single individual in crystal clear truthfulness is more important than millions of people fast asleep. Okay, Manish?
Yes, Bhagwan.
Mm-hmm.